Views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Well, it's now Wednesday after 6 p.m., and joining me in the studio is my good friend Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. He and I have been doing this for, almost 3 years now, and we've been loving every minute of it. Welcome back to the studio, Rob.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Joining us in just a few minutes is our good friend Rich Quarterman. He's going to be calling in from upstate New York. We can't wait to get him on the line and talk about Dumpster Fire 2016 or the U.S. presidential election, however you want to refer to it. I think Dumpster Fire 2016 is so apropos. Before we do that, though, as we like to do before we get our interviews off and rolling, here's John Lennon and Power to the People, a reminder that democracy is powered by the people, not by other sources. John Lennon, of course, his anthem for democracy. Power to the people right here on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. Well, you know, I'm looking at Politico. One of the things they've posted today is five things to watch in tonight's last debate. And we're going to go through these five things. But joining me on the phone right now from upstate New York is our good friend Rich Quartermain. Rich, welcome to the studio, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it.
Glad we can have you here today to talk about this, as I am want to call it a dumpster fire 2016. I know in the U.S. it's the general election. How are things where you are?
Well, if you're talking local or national, New York's a pretty safe blue state, so I see Hillary cruising to a fairly big victory. The interesting part is the local Congress. You've got a pretty big Bernie supporter in Zephyr Teachout, very well known, very leftward, competing against a fairly rightward former, I want to say the Attorney General, and John Faso. Very interesting. Both fairly politically heavyweighted. The district is very purple. It's been Democrat. It's been Republican. So it's an intriguing watching the U.S. House of Representatives election here. This is one that's going to be very interesting. I think the nation as a whole probably going to go for a Democratic victory at the presidency. But is Hillary Clinton able to have coattails is the big question.
Well, I think one of the other questions I think a lot of voters are asking themselves, I mean, obviously the biggest problem they've had over the last 8 years anyway has been a lack of cooperation, a lack of cohesion between the House and the White House. And obviously, if we're going to continue with the same party in power, we need to think about shifting some of that focus, some of the obstinance from Congress, getting rid of some of those brokers that sort of held things up. I mean, right now, if I understand correctly, you guys are looking towards another budgetary lockdown. Am I correct on that one?
Yeah, if it continues this way, I mean, right now they're doing continuing acts, which is a troubling. It's a Band-Aid on an open wound, and that's not really going to get done. And one of the other big problems that President Obama has faced is not only is there extreme intractability from the far right section of the Republican Party, but a lot of the moderate Republicans and some of the blue dog Democrats have been decimated over the last 10 to 15 years. They're sort of, not only are they quote-unquote moderates in terms of their political views, they're also expert deal makers, people that can get something to the president's desk that maybe it's not pretty, but like all laws, sometimes you don't want to see the sausage made, you just want it there.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people have been talking about focusing down ballot. I've been saying the same thing. I mean, realistically, in my estimation, there's not a whole lot different between Clinton and Trump, other than the bombastic rhetoric from Trump. I mean, realistically, what we're seeing is ultimately two status quo corporate candidates. Whether Donald Trump wants to call himself different is up to him. But I think the reality is very different. Are Americans seeing that?
For the most part, I think one of the things is they take a look at the two, and I don't think most Americans, or I should say at least the plurality of Americans, think that there's all that much difference. One is a maybe slightly left of center on some issues, machine politician, Hillary Clinton, and although Donald Trump is anything but a machine politician, he is a creature of the system who had a billionaire father and is a multi-billionaire himself. And neither person is particularly what I would call in touch. They're both creatures of the system, whether Donald Trump says so or not. And all that Donald Trump is he's flat out just torn the veneer off the hard right and kind of exposed it for its sort of misogynistic and knee-jerky self.
Rich, I'm curious. I know that we were talking about down ticket, that there has been a lot of conflict with some local candidates about endorsing Trump or acknowledging Trump. I know Paul Ryan has, you know, basically, while he hasn't stopped endorsing him, he's not acknowledging him, and he's focusing on the down ticket stuff. What are you seeing at the local level? What's your Republican candidate in your area saying about Trump?
As silent as the grave. Really? Basically, they just ease. And you'll find that a lot of the particularly any of the Republicans running north of 30 miles in New York City, so running north of Westchester County, are silent. The first person to actually back Clinton among all the Republican congressional candidates was the Republican congressional candidate out of Utica in Michael Hanna, who runs in a very purple district. It's gone Republican, it's gone Democrat. You know, it's a very mixed district. He was the first Republican to say, I can't endorse this person and endorse Clinton among all congressional folks.
Mm-hmm.
So while there's a few Trump surrogates out there, way out, particularly in Western New York, most of the Republicans are probably silent, and a few have crossed the line.
Are they being pushed, though, by, say, local media or by the public to come out with any kind of a statement about it? I mean, it's one thing to not raise it yourself, but if you're being asked directly or you're going to town halls and people are saying, you know, where do you stand? Have we heard anything at all like that? Has there been any kind of response to a direct question about it?
You know, here's the funny part. I'm a subscriber to two local newspapers. They're electronic versions.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen either of them, of all the questions asked regarding that in the debates or whatever else, John Faso has largely said, I'm focused on local issues. And that's his whole thing. I'm focused on local issues. And that's all he's saying.
What are those local issues, though?
For the most part, you know, when you're talking this area, the real question is, it's a socially progressive area, so things like gay marriage and other things and whatnot are off the table. What's on the table are things like, do we want to allow local variants for things like fracking as opposed to the state policy, which currently bans fracking?
Mm-hmm.
That's one example. A lot of the Republicans are said to favor local decision making, as an example. Another one is what to do. What do you do about Syria? Are you more or less interventionist in this particular area? Faso, I think, would support kind of a middling interventionism. Teachout who's the Democratic candidate, would likely pull out of Syria beyond humanitarian measures.
Mm-hmm.
That's a flashpoint.
Does that include supplying weapons to Al Qaeda, for instance? Let's face it, that's who we're using to fight Assad at this point, is Al Qaeda and other members of those, if you will, radicalized Islamic movements there that aren't IS. From what I'm seeing, and this is, you know, looking outside the fishbowl, I think the intervention in Syria really is problematic. I don't think, not just for Obama, but even from a global perspective, right? I mean, all we're really doing is choosing sides in a war where we really didn't support anybody in the first place.
Yeah, and that's the real problem. I mean, we get to the classic land war in Asia issue, but it's actually really true in the fact there's too many sides. And I think the best thing that can really happen right now is that we bring everybody to the table. And no one's proposed this yet, but at some point, we're going to need to wrangle up everybody outside of the Daesh ISIS folks. We're going to have to put them on a table and say, look, you juvenile delinquents, here is how we sit down. We need to hammer out a cut. And there may even be territorial concessions to certain places. There may be people that get displaced over time. There may be some divisions of Syria, which I know Assad does not like. But if he wants to keep his stranglehold on power, maybe necessary.
Definition, though? I mean, is that really a fair definition for Assad? I mean, we know that recent polls, international polls, and polls that have been done by media in the region are showing that there is still overwhelming support for President Assad. I mean, they call him a despot. We here in the West have labeled him a terrorist leader, a dictator. But to the people in that region, and I'm talking about other neighboring countries and other countries, even residents in their own country, I mean, the overwhelming majority of people that have been polled still say they support Bashar al-Assad. So is it reasonable for us in the West to declare this guy unfit to be the government in that country when really the people of that country are necessarily more on side with him?
Yeah, it's an interesting part because I think what's happened is that the people it's a result of two things. One, because Al-Assad tends to control a lot of the media and the other informational, he tends to have that cult of personality built up. More so his father than he, but that's one part. The other part that I think is really is they're taking a look at everybody else,
mm-hmm.
and they're saying, "Oh dear God, no!" Because at least under Assad, for what it's worth, yes, he was a bully, and yes, he's an autocrat. But they're looking at the end of the day, they're looking at, hey, I got a job. There's a middle class in Syria. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a beggared country.
Well, and I gotta wonder here though, guys. How can we talk about a poll in Syria? Because you know, what about all the refugees that aren't there that fled that were anti-Assad? I mean, the only people that are left, if they're the majority, they're Assad supporters, right?
Yeah, well, even so, the people we had here, though, even the guests we had in our studio didn't say they didn't support Assad.
Well, but I can't believe that there would be a poll that would even be somewhat reflective of the nation because it's so messed up. But what I would like to go back to though, because I think international policy is fascinating. I am interested in the American election and what's going on locally. And I'm interested, Rich, in how policy versus character. What we've been seeing at a national level is very little discussion about policy and a lot of assassination of character on both sides. What is happening at the local level? Are they talking about policy or are we seeing remnants of this new paradigm where policy doesn't seem to even matter? It's more about are you fit to govern?
The more local the election, assuming for the moment that the person, one of the opponents isn't completely incompetent and or criminal, if you hold that aside for just a second, the local elections get much more down to politics. It's the old Tip O'Neill adage, all politics is local. Now, the one thing that's slightly complicated that over the past about 8 years has been a lot of national money going into local elections.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a lot of those, whether it's the Koch brothers or others. Koch brothers, I can't ever remember which one how to pronounce the last name, but whatever it is,
I prefer your pronunciation.
Whatever the national money in there has had some very distinct impact on what used to be very 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 localized things, and I'll give you a classic example. One of my cousin's grandfather was a congressman in Western North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and his whole big life was spent in his influence was almost all on national parks and land use, and that was his expertise in Congress. And he stuck with those local issues that impacted that area that really reflected around North Carolina's land use. Now you get all these national monies in there, and they start changing some of the landscape to include national issues in what used to be purely local elections for Congress. And that, in turn, has changed a lot of the dynamics for local. They're still trying to hash out local issues. And when you have two fairly well-funded candidates, like where I live,
mm-hmm.
they have no trouble getting the local issues together.
Rich,
when you start seeing national fundings, that's when they start changing the local issues.
That's really interesting. And I guess an extension of that, then, is the style of this election. You notice that there's been a huge emphasis on negativity, going negative. And we've talked, I know, in the past about negative advertising and how effective it can or can't be. Are we seeing any increase in the negativity of the local campaigns? Are we seeing more negative ads? Are we seeing a tenor that is maybe more negative just in the way that they talk to each other? Or are they still respectful and you know, it's been such a different dynamic at the national level. Is it trickling down to the local level?
It is and it isn't. If you can tell by the disclaimers at the end, if the money comes from, say, the RNCC or the DCC, which are the two Republican and National
sure.
and Democratic National Campaign Committees,
uh-huh.
if it comes from those, you expect to see more of an attack kind of ad. If it comes from locally supported money, it tends to be more of a of a positive or at least an issues focused thing. There will always be mudslinging in American politics, but my sense is that if the national committee buys the ad at a competitive district, it's usually to attack.
So are you saying that the national campaigns are buying ads about local candidates, or are these national ads that are about Hillary and Donald?
About local candidates.
Really?
Particularly in, I'll give you a classic example.
Uh-huh.
Right here in my very competitive district,
mm-hmm.
There was one ad sponsored by one of the national campaign committees that accused the other one of de facto being a tax skip out while advocating higher taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an example of something that does that necessarily change anyone's vote? I don't know. But certainly from a perceptive value basis, this was not something that came up. And you didn't hear the candidate say, I approve this message. You hear the so-and-so congressional campaign committee is responsible for the content of this message.
Mm-hmm.
And there's your tip-off right there. So that's national money in a locally competitive election that changes the tenor from issues and locality-based to character.
Wow. And what about, I know Trump of the last few days has been really pushing hard the agenda of a rigged election. I know he's been doing it for a while, but it's really been stepped up in the last 7 days. Has that had any impact, do you think, on the local campaigns? Are you seeing people becoming concerned about whether their vote is going to count on a local level and that it may be rigged on a local level, or sort of a distrust or disdain for the electoral process?
Not so much on the local level, it's usually a fear somewhere over there, like it's someone else's fault in Ohio or Nevada or whatever. Not so much here because I'll tell you what happens when I go to take the poll on in the first Tuesday in November there.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen is I'm going to walk in and I'm going to sign, my name is going to be in a poll on a registered poll with my signature next to it. I'm going to sign against it in the presence of a Republican and a Democratic poll watcher. So I for the most part, I don't really fear that. And it's electronically counted. The likelihood of any kind of mass ballot fraud or election stealing, such as Trump says, I think other than a couple of his already paranoid base who are probably voting for him anyways,
mm-hmm.
I don't suspect that's really got much traction here in the States.
Well, on that note, Rich, we're going to take our first break of the hour. When we come back, more of our conversation with Rich Quartermain, more on Dumpster Fire 2016 south of the border. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time. This is our weekly installment of Consider-This with my guests, Rob Washburn and Rich Quartermain. We will be right back after these messages.
Shimmy, shake, move, and groove while listening to adventurous stories from around the world. Come on and join me, The Traveler, host of Capsize, every Friday night, 10 to midnight. Remember to ride the wave and don't capsize right here on Northumberland 89.7. Truly local radio.
Baby, I like you so.
You can wish it wasn't so, but winter will soon be at your door. Now is the perfect time to ensure your home comfort system is ready. If your furnace is more than 10 years old, it may be time to consider a new one. For a limited time, receive up to $1,500 in cash rebates with the purchase of a new comfort system from Pritchard's Climate Care. Call Pritchard's Climate Care at 905-885-8216 or visit pritchard-mechanical.com. At Pritchard's, we're not just your home climate care experts, we're your neighbors.
Come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas. Playing October 14th to 20th, The Accountant, rated 14A. No free passes accepted. The Girl on the Train, rated 14A. Deepwater Horizon, rated 14A. And Snowden, rated 14A. The Rainbow Cinemas are located in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West. Give them a call, 905-372-2444, or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
In your face, all over the place. We're online, 24-7, 24-7.
Northumberland89.7.ca.
And welcome back to The Drive Time. My guest in studio is Rob Washburn, joining us on the line from New York State. Where are you exactly, Rich?
I am in the lovely city of Poughkeepsie, about 60 miles north of your city.
In lovely Poughkeepsie. I don't know why we're popping here back and forth, but we'll see. I'm having some problems with the phone connection all of a sudden. Before the break, one of the things actually during the break I said to you was that there's a piece from Politico today, five things to watch for. We're going to quickly run through those. Clinton will be on the defensive, apparently. That's what they're saying. Trump's fitness to lead has rightly been the main focus, but here's some good news for him. Trump has done such a masterful job of handling Clinton, the election, that the inevitable focus is going to be on her. And, of course, this is her debate to lose. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say Trump's going to come out swinging because he's desperate. And like the boxer who's down 10 rounds to one in a 12-round fight, he knows the only thing he can get is a knockout.
Oh, absolutely. How low will Trump go? That's the next question. I mean, last time Trump pretty much chased himself to the bottom. He said that she had hate in her heart. He talked about Bill Clinton's accusers in front. Apparently, he's got Barack Obama's stepbrother or half-brother now in the audience traveling with him. So how low do you think Trump's willing to go on this one?
Like a three-year-old at a limbo. That's low.
So nothing new then?
Nothing new. He's just going to keep on going. He's going to flail. He's going to bring out whatever he can. He's desperate.
Do you think the American voters are going to see that desperation? I mean, one of the things he needs to hide, obviously, is his desperation, right?
You would think, but I don't know that he can. He's a person who wears every emotion on the surface. That's how he's made his television portion of his career. He's worn everything on his sleeve. You're fired. People expect him to be that blustery tornado in the room. And so if he's not that blustery, argumentative self, if he's anything less than firing out on all punches, I think he does himself a disservice, at least from his supporters.
But do you think, though, that there's a possibility that if he throws enough mud, that eventually something's going to stick? I mean, he's been ramping it up pretty seriously over the last two debates, and in the rhetoric in between the second and the one that's going tonight. What are the chances that some of this finally may stick to her, and he may start getting traction in terms of bringing her down on some of these issues that he's been pushing in regards to the emails and
the WikiLeaks releases
exactly,
that have come out too, right?
And also her record in Congress, having 30 years of political experience, and what has she accomplished? All those kinds of rhetorical things that he uses against her. How much of that is going to stick, do you think, if he just keeps heaping it on tonight?
At this point, I don't think any of it's going to stick, and I'll tell you why. I need a friend of, or my cousin of mine, who is a far-right Trump supporter. You know, everything you could possibly imagine a Trump supporter to be in stereotype. And he literally wanted, he told me, at of all things, holiday dinner, that he wanted Hillary Clinton hung in a public square. Not kidding you, and he meant it.
Wow.
This is the kind of people that to whom Trump's punches already appeal.
Right.
So I don't think any amount of mud he slings now, unless he has something so new and so something that hasn't got with his completely new field that totally no one knows about, I don't think any of it sticks because it's already there. In his voter's mind.
Do you think that Clinton, though, could crack or slip? I know she's a very polished debater, and we've seen her come under some pretty substantial fire in the last two debates. Is there a possibility that he could rile her tonight or unsettle her enough that she might make a major gaffe?
Here's where he could get a slip in. Her, not only, you're right, on cool and calm demeanor. And she's going to secure about 80% of the women's vote in the homeland. What he's got to get that slip in is something she values, labor rights, women's rights, something on which she has staked a claim. And these are Trump's weakest points. He's got to find a way to slip a punch in there, maybe on something in foreign relations where she prides herself and being an advocate for a number of rights. He's got to find a way to slip a punch in there that brings up something she holds dear and her record in that regard under scrutiny.
Well, it sounds to me like that could be the TPP. I mean, you know, as we know, she was one of the primary architects of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The Trans-Pacific Partnership undermines labor in the United States. She's showing right now a lot of support with organized labor. The AFL-CIO are all supporting her. And yet their belief is that she is going to be anti-TPP. We know, right now, the only anti-TPP candidate on the ticket is Donald Trump.
Yeah, and I have, right about now, I don't, the one, here are two issues with the TPP. One, about 5% of Americans know anything about it from an intelligence perspective. They might have heard of it, they might oppose it or support it based on the end results for them. But very few Americans spend their time reading the details of a trade deal and what is worrisome or not worrisome.
Right.
So I think, to me, that sort of an extraneous issue, and that he's not going to have as much love getting in there. He's got to get something she really cares about.
Mm-hmm.
And TPP, I think, for her, is it's a back burner issue compared to other things.
If we can just change a bit of the course right now, I'm curious also about what's going on in terms of the candidates themselves coming into your area. Have you had any visits by Trump or Clinton at all during the presidential race?
Yeah, Trump had a fairly big appearance. As you know, they're both New Yorkers, and they live in the New York City area.
Yep.
Trump had a fairly major appearance about 5 minutes down the road in at Marist College, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton's had several in this area on even before she started running, because she's done a lot of this area's chambers of commerce major events.
So who's been coming to campaign then to give support to the local candidates? If the presidential candidates are, I know Paul Ryan's now making a big deal about getting out and trying to get into to help these local candidates so that they don't lose control of the House or the Senate or the Congress. Who are you seeing showing up and trying to rev up the troops?
For the most part, particularly and surprisingly so, there has not been a very large national presence here in a competitive district. I would have expected someone like a Paul Ryan or a Bernie Sanders have come a little more. Bernie Sanders was here during the New York primary. But Sanders has been going to try. What Sanders has been doing, he's been making sure that some of the more daring candidates are getting the Bernie Revolution types on their side, and then Paul Ryan's been trying to get to places where his message is going to resonate. For the most part, despite the competitiveness of this particular district, a lot of the support has been surprising to me, less national and more a lot of the local celebrity flavor. So, you know, people that you wouldn't have heard on a national basis, but, you know, XYZ mayor or Chamber of Commerce official endorses this person.
So in terms of the local dynamic, then, how much do you think people are engaged then at a presidential level, and how much are they compared to, engaged at the local level? What do you think is going to drag them out to the polls?
Great question. The one thing that is true is I think certainly in New York, there's a whole lot of, oh, my God, not Trump vote. So that'll drag people out. And then people sometimes, I think you've got about 70% of the people in this district that are committed to vote for either, we'll take congressional aspect, FASO or Teach Out, because it's a great proxy election for left and right in this country.
Mm-hmm.
I think 70% of the people are already decided, and I think about 30% might actually just make a decision in the box, which is a little higher than normal. But these are two candidates that are fairly even as the polls go. They're within 3 or 4% of each other, which is within margin of error depending upon who's doing the polling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're going to see a lot of people in what we call purple districts, the mixed ones, make their decision literally in the ballot booth, and it can't even be the result of so much as having a bad day. If you're familiar with the 1978 Dukakis gubernatorial disaster,
mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating study in American politics, how Dukakis was seemingly young and popular in the beginning of the Route 128 revolution,
mm-hmm.
and then there was a sudden downturn, and I think the Red Sox had lost on Bucky Dent's home run, and the mood just turned sour like that, and it tipped the election.
Well, absolutely. Now, one of the other things that we haven't talked about yet, and we talked about down ballot, and we've talked about this race, but you know, even most recent polls out there that indicate that Clinton's in a slight lead, what they're not talking about is the fact that just 53% of Americans support either of these parties. There's still a huge swath of Americans out there that don't support either of these parties or either of these candidates. Where will those 47% of the voters, where will they settle? Are they going to go with a write-in for Bernie Sanders, who could still win it if he gets 10 states? Is it going to be Jill Stein? Is it going to be Gary Johnson, who really, in the minds of most people, other than the fact that he's a fun guy who likes to smoke pot, really doesn't understand anything at the national level? I mean, how big of a role is that 47% going to play? I'm going to leave that question with you. We're going to take our break for the hour, last break of the hour. I'm going to put as many of these breaks in as possible. And then when we come back, that's the question I'd like to answer, if we could. We'll be right back, listeners. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. My guest on the line is our good friend Rich Quartermain from Poughkeepsie, New York, and, of course, Rob Washburn, professor of e-journalism at Loyalist College. We will be right back.
Want some spice with your bacon and eggs? Join me, John Holland, for the Saturday Morning Show right here on Northumberland 89.7. I'll let you know what's going on throughout the county and bring back some memories playing some of the greatest hits of all time and some of your personal favorites. So let's grab a morning coffee together and make it a date. That's the Saturday Morning Show with me, John Holland, right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
When it comes to computers and the internet today, it's hard to know who and what to trust. When something goes wrong, you could call your daughter, your brother-in-law, that kid who mows the lawn, or you could call Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professional. Computer Solutions, located at 208 King Street East in Colborne, is open 6 days a week. They have ample parking and convenient hours, plus you can arrange to have your system picked up or dropped off right from your door. Call Computer Solutions today at 905-355-3622 or stop by their store in Colborne at 208 King Street East. Computer Solutions, your neighborhood computer professionals.
Hi, this is Lane with What's Happening This Week, Wednesday at the St. John's Parish Hall, a community dinner. At 6 o'clock, doors open at 5. Come in for good food, good conversation. Everyone welcome. Friday, the Horizon of Friendship silent auction begins from 10 till 4. It runs again Saturday from 10 till 4 at the Northumberland Mall. Wesleyville is having a Halloween event on Saturday, 2082 Lakeshore Road. It's a ghostly visit from 6 to 8 p.m. I must say the Farmer's Market in Port Hope will only run for 2 more weeks. Saturday, learn about sustainable living at the Market Building in Coburg starting at 4 p.m. Talk about non-GMO heirloom seed varieties. If you have any event coming up, you can contact us at info@northumberland897.ca. This is Lane with What's Happening This Week.
This Friday, for one night only, Gary Wesley makes his triumphant return to Northumberland as Elvis Presley. Join Gary Wesley and special guest Ian Roy as they pay tribute to Elvis Presley and Roy Orbison. 7:30 at the Grafton Legion on Highway 2. Tickets are $20 and available at Zap Records or at the door.
Old Time Radio has a new home. Classic radio dramas, suspense, and comedies. Sunday evenings, 9 until midnight, here on Northumberland 89.7.
And welcome back to the big broadcast. My friend on the line, Rich Quartermain from Poughkeepsie, New York. Beautiful downtown Poughkeepsie. I remember Poughkeepsie from the George M. Cohan biography with Jimmy Cagney, because, of course, he loved to go to Poughkeepsie. Right now, just an update for the Jays fans out there. Jays, we're at the bottom of the ninth right now. The Jays are still down 3-0. We shall see what happens here. But they got a guy on second right now. It looks like Jose Bautista is still standing there on second. And Troy Tulowitzki is at bat. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I'm not ready. Now, again, I don't really know for sure, but is this a best of seven series or a best of five?
You're asking the wrong guy.
I believe they're 3-1, aren't they?
Yeah, I think we're asking the wrong people here, aren't we? So, welcome back. So the conversation, the question I asked just before the break, and I think it's an important question to have answered, because at this point, even the odds makers can't make a decision on who's going to win this one. That's why Hillary's only polling about 9 points ahead in most of the national polls, is that 47% of Americans are unaffiliated and quite frankly, not enamored with either of these candidates. So there's still a big push on to write in Bernie Sanders. He's on the ballot in 21 states, as I understand correctly. So there's still a chance. I mean, let's face it, Lincoln won with just just 10 states. So they didn't have the Electoral College back then, though, did they?
Yeah, they did. It was a different format because senators weren't directly elected until the early 1900s. But here's the way it's going to work. I think a lot of Americans, I think you are going to get a pretty substantial Bernie write-in ballot. But it's going to be, the U.S. will have adapted something from Canada in strategic voting. They will take a look at how safe they're, say, for example, you're part of the Dear Lord, Not Trump movement.
Mm-hmm.
You will take a look at how safe your state is. If your state is safe Hillary, you're going to get a fairly significant vote for Bernie Sanders or Gary Johnson. If your state is super competitive,
mm-hmm.
you may take Hillary Clinton as a means of defending against Trump, just because the concept of a Trump presidency is truly frightening. Then you begin out in the particularly in the Midwestern and mountain states, I think you'll see a pretty significant Gary Johnson vote.
Really?
That tends to be where he polls the strongest. Yeah, it's in those Midwestern, you know, kind of rugged individualism in their mind. He appeals the libertarian small government discussion, I think, that he brings up.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's clueless on a lot of things like Aleppo, and I'm not endorsing the person, but he's bringing an important conversation to those Midwest and mountain states, and I think he'll poll fairly strongly there. I think he might get as much in a state like Utah, New Mexico, he might poll as high as 8 or 9%. So I think
but even domestic policy, the guy's in the dark. I mean, he's been asked a couple of times, what would he do first? He wants to get rid of the IRS. He wants to get rid of income tax. He wants to get rid of the Department of Housing. He wants to get rid of the Department of Urban Renewal and Planning. I mean, he wants to get rid of these integral parts. And they were asked him, well, who's going to take on those responsibilities? He goes, well, Now you're getting into the weeds of policy, he said. And I mean, the reality is, you know, you can't do that. It's as simple. It's official, by the way, listeners. The Jays have lost to the Cleveland Indians 3-0 today. And the Cubbies and the Dodgers are going to be getting ready to play in a couple hours, in about an hour. So there you go for our sports fans. Sorry about that.
I'm interested, though, Rich. You know, it's with this large number of voters who have not made a decision that Dave was talking about earlier. Is it really smart to be even trying to predict how people are going to vote? Because it just Dave's allusions to the chaotic nature of this campaign and the I think the nicest way to say it is the untraditional way that things have been handled. Can we even sit here and hope to make any sort of predictions as to how races are going to turn out at a national level?
Here's the states you want to look at. If you want to take a predictive tally at the best guess, here are your six states that really super matter: Ohio, Arizona, Iowa, Florida, North Carolina, and Nevada. Those six states, if they go majority for Hillary, or even 50-50 for Hillary, you can rest assured pretty well that America's mood is, I'm going to vote for Hillary because I'm going to just punt to 2020 and I'll take someone safe. That's the viewpoint.
But how can you say that when so many are polling to say that they loathe this woman, they don't like her, she's got a very negative appeal to a lot of people? Again, I go back to this notion that there is this massive unknown sitting out there, these voters who haven't made up their minds yet, who could go one way or the other. Isn't it dangerous to say, you know, it's going to go one way, you know, this is going to happen or that's going to happen? I wonder.
It's dangerous to say, but this is something called polling dissonance. Sometimes people say they dislike both candidates, but at the end of the day, mm-hmm. they vote not so much on whether they like or trust someone,
mm-hmm.
so much as how do they want, what kind of nature to the policy and the politics are they going to have for 4 years? And that's not always pretty. Sometimes people just turn their noses and vote. And I suspect that's the case. And if you mm-hmm. see those six states turn for Clinton significantly, I suspect you'll see something close to a landslide for her. They're canaries in the coal mine states.
Mm-hmm.
What about Florida? Is Florida still in play this time around?
Florida's still very much in play.
Is there a chance Rubio could lose his seat? I mean, we've seen this. We've actually heard this. A number of these candidates, former GOP candidates, Ted Cruz, for instance, Rubio, and others like them, who a lot of people are blaming for the rise of Donald Trump, seriously. Is there a chance that those guys are going to lose their seats? What do you think of that?
I don't think Rubio will, because I think Rubio's had enough cash to remain popular. He's very popular in his state.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a couple of other players that went in there. I think the person who's getting the biggest blowback right now is Chris Christie. I think he'll lose his gubernatorial seat.
Well, he's looking like they might indict him, too, over Bridgegate.
Yeah, exactly. He could be done like dinner. But there's a few people that I think lost some serious cash. But I think the one who's taken I think Rubio will retain his seat closely, mm-hmm. from what I'm reading now. In fact, my parents reside permanently in Florida. But the person, I think, Christie's taken a lot. There's more than a few Republicans that have taken a pretty big hit for either their support / lukewarm silence on Trump,
mm-hmm.
rather than someone like Michael Hanna up in Utica, who has gotten probably a 3 to 4 point poll bump for rejecting Trump and being out in front of it.
Yeah, but he'd still work with Trump if he was elected president. I mean, let's be frank. Well, the GOP in the Congress would they don't care if it's Donald Trump or not, as long as it's a GOP president, right?
Well, actually, you'd be surprised. One of the things about congressmen is they prefer is depending upon where they're from. If you're deep south, far right, they don't care. They're going to stop a Democratic president and work with a Republican one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you come from more of a purple district, they're more interested in bringing home legislation and bringing home bacon, Canadian or otherwise. And if they can demonstrate that they're bringing home something for their home districts, then that's all they care, because they care about winning the next election. If you're in a safe district, then you can throw all the bombs you want.
Right. If you're in a safe district. So if you're Charlie Wilson, you can sit in. You're in a safe district.
Yeah.
All righty. So tonight now, what are your predictions for tonight? Is Donald just going to dive right into the gutter? Or are we going to hear more about Bill Clinton? Or do you think Donald is finally going to start talking about actual concrete policy?
I think he's going to try and start with some policy. If his advisors are, he's going to try and start with some policy. He's going to try to bring people in, because he can, when he's concentrating on not making a fool of himself, he can be fairly engaging for the first 20 minutes. I think if he senses things are slipping, for whatever reason, he will revert to form, and he'll just start throwing as much mud as he possibly can. Because I think in the back of his head, he knows he's in pretty dire straits.
Right. What about the notion that he doesn't want to win this anyway? What about this notion that this has just been a big publicity game for Donald Trump? Is that still valid, do you think?
I do. I honestly think that part of his mind is, I really don't want this job. I didn't expect to win the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw everything I possibly can at it in terms of me, and I really don't care if I win or not. And I think that's very much, I don't think he really wants the job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only is it a massive pay cut for him, but the demands of the presidency for a person who's used to getting his way without consultation, it's incredibly, it's the same reason why someone like Ross Perot, I think, would have struggled in the presidency, and a couple of other people who have run,
mm-hmm.
From outside without political experience, if they don't understand how to create political capital. I'm not saying people would necessarily not work with him at all, because they have to, he's the president. But this is a person who is used to being able to tell people what to do,
mm-hmm.
and they do it, because otherwise they get fired. In the case of the U.S. federal government, you can't fire 85% of them, even if you want to.
True enough. So yeah. This has really just been an effort, then, because again, the assertion is out there that a lot of people think this is really just about Trump advancing his brand, because of course he's a brand now, right?
He's brand Trump, and he has been since he started marketing games and such in the 80s. A buddy of mine has the Donald Trump real estate game. Not kidding you.
So, Rich, tonight will we see the bar drop lower in terms of presidential debates, or do you think it'll stay the same, or do you think it might take an upswing?
I don't know that we can get any lower. I mean,
we're pretty much swimming in our own filth at this point. But I mean, I suspect, like I said, if he gets desperate, he'll start bringing out Barack Obama's half brother, as if that matters, you know, or something like that. He's gonna find whatever he can to fling. He's gonna be kind of the monkey flinging poo at everyone and seeing what sticks around. But I suspect, if anything else, the one thing I sense, you know, as we're getting close to the end here, the one thing I sense is America is, one, they're tired of the whole darn election, and two, they're tired of his act. And I think a lot of Americans, they may not be thrilled with Hillary Clinton, and you can count just about every American, you know, Democrat or Republican, like, Hillary Clinton, all right, sure. That's the typical reaction, even from some of her more ardent supporters.
But how fair is that, though? I mean, everyone, even Trump says, you know, you've been in government for 30 years. You know, why haven't you done something? But the reality is she hasn't been in government for 30 years. She was only ever once elected to the Senate for a single term. Am I correct on that?
And
then after that, she was appointed Secretary of State. But prior to that, really virtually no government experience. I mean, she tried to do the health care thing under Bill. But other than that, I mean, other than being the First Lady of the United States and the First Lady of the state of Arkansas, she is not a political person. She's been in the room, right? But that's like saying, you know, the maid at the White House qualifies to be president because she served there, worked at the White House for 25 years. She's got 25 years experience in politics.
She's an attorney with a lot of government connections. And that kind of attorney makes a lot of political cash, but usually they're behind the scenes type. This is the first time we're seeing a person who's essentially kind of a functionalist wonk, very much a creature of the political system, actually being more or less likely elevated to the presidency, and with all the good and bad that come with that. She knows the game in Washington probably better than any other human being alive. The question really is, what does that leave us with? It probably leaves us with a person who is systemic and functionalist and won't rock the boat.
I'm going to be really interested to just see what the viewership will be like tonight. If it goes up, if it goes down, if it stays the same, I think that'll be really telling. Anyway,
I think you're right. And thanks again, Rich, for calling us.
Thank you so much.
Now, just for the viewers and for listeners' information, we are hoping to get Rich here on the day after Election Day, the day the dumpster fire goes out, or maybe it's going to be prolonged. We don't know. We may not even know the next day who the winner is. Rich, I look forward to speaking to you then. Enjoy tonight's debate if you're watching it. I'm Dave Glover. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. Here's John Lennon. Thanks, Rich.